Welcome to Recovery Comes Home Radio, your go-to podcast for all things related to addiction recovery. Whether you are an individual in recovery, a concerned loved one, or a dedicated professional, this podcast is tailored just for you. Here, we are all about empowering you with the tools, insights, and inspiration you need to move forward. So grab your headphones, tune in, and let's embark on this transformative journey together.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Recovery Comes Home Radio, the podcast where we talk about all things recovery from an individual, from a parent's or loved one's, or from a professional perspective. Today, I am so happy to welcome Elizabeth to our stage. She's got quite a story to tell. She's been on both sides of the issue, and I can't wait to dive into it. So let's go. So Elizabeth, tell us a little bit about your recovery story. Give us our listeners a brief overview.
Thank you so much, Adrienne. I'm so grateful to be here at Recovery Comes Home and share. Well, I really, to begin with, although I didn't know it until many, many years later, the impact of it, but I was born, my mother went into a deep depression as soon as she delivered me, and we were separated for 9 months. I went into an incubator. I couldn't feed because I had a closed pyloric valve. And for 2 weeks, my pediatrician, who I feel was really divinely inspired because they didn't have NICUs back then and they didn't have surgery for that. She put my mattress at a 45 degree angle and gravity opened that.
Wow.
But for those first 2 weeks, I not only suffered for all that period, I suffered from not having my mother, but I suffered without being able to, you know, nurse or feed. So that began with this, you know, energy of, you know, there's not enough. There's not enough.
And the lack of.
Yeah. Yeah. And then anyway, my mom was bipolar and I had such a lovely life in many ways. I had a great education. I had beautiful clothes. I had wonderful food to eat. We had just wonderful. I had a lovely house and I had a brother and a father and who's really nice. But my mom was really unstable, undiagnosed bipolar disorder and she had back pain, also lower back pain. And she medicated all of that with alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of Coca-Cola during the day and sweets. I mean, she really was I'm really into the sugar thing. So that creates lots of emotional imbalance right there.
Just sure does.
Sugar in the diet, right? So that turned out to be difficult because she was very explosive. And I knew every day I would get in trouble, but I never knew when or why. Because it was very inconsistent. Don't do this, or what are you doing that? And I was like, there was no, some days it was okay and other days it wasn't. So it was very inconsistent. And and so I was living in this frequency of there's not enough and I'm not enough.
Wow.
And it's not enough. And no matter what I do, it's still not going to be enough. Right. So
right.
Really hypervigilant and that's really a recipe for chronic pain, which is any pain that's felt 15 days out of 30 for 3 months or more, physical, mental, emotional, spiritual. It doesn't matter.
No.
All that, any kind of pain that sends a signal, same signal to the brain, it hurts. So the brain can't tell the difference, for instance, between a broken bone and a broken heart.
Yeah.
So the same signal. So yeah. I grew up in this chronic pain environment. And then when I was 14, I had an accident. I fell off a horse and landed on a rock and broke my fifth lumbar in two pieces front to back. Because I was able to get up and walk away from that accident. And because I had this history of chronic pain behind me, I didn't realize I'd actually done that. I knew it hurt. I was like,
yeah,
this hurts, right? But I didn't realize that I had done it with serious damage. And so I never even said anything about, I mean, the trainer that was there that saw me fall and knew it was a rock. He didn't tell my dad. I got up and walked away. None of us thought much more about it. And then 7 years later, I was having a lot of difficulty walking upstairs. And I thought, maybe I should go see a doctor. And they took an x-ray. And they said, well, this is an old injury you have. And I'm like, oh, I know when that happened.
Yeah, right. How much later did they find it? Then
7 years.
7 years later, wow.
And for seven more years, the chiropractors kept me going because they wanted me to have surgery. I was like, yeah, I don't think so. But after 14 years after that accident, I had surgery. I began this surgery. And It took four surgeries to get that stable. We got it stable, but it took four surgeries. And as soon as that instability began, where I started feeling so much pain that I was like, so you need to have surgery now. That was when the opiate pain medication and the benzodiazepine started. The benzodiazepine is an anti-anxiety medicine that at that point, I had such a reaction to the pain. In the science-y world, we would call that allostatic load. I had my allostatic load, which is the measure of stress in the system. It was so high at that point that my whole system was just going off.
Yeah.
And I was just constantly, you know, in this alert state. And
hypervigilant.
Hypervigilant. And my whole nervous system was just on, you know, was in the on position. Sleeping was really difficult. So we really needed to bring in some, and those medications were the best that the doctors knew at the time. So started surgery then 31 years later, took 31 years for me to, like, I had surgery for the next 5 years or so.
Yeah.
And then the pain, you know, just they couldn't get a handle on the pain. And they all said, well, you're going to be in pain for the rest of your life. 24/7, and it, you know, at level 7 out of 10 pain. And I'm just like, this is not
what I signed up for.
Not okay.
Yeah.
I had this science background. I had this degree in plant science. So I had, you know, and I was trained as a researcher. So I understood that our healing models could have limitations.
Yes.
And I chose to see that as that, oh, you're not going to get better. I chose to see that as them having a limitation in the model they were working in, not a limitation in me.
Yeah, I feel you. I'm same. I've been sick since I was young. And some of the things that doctors have said to me are just ghastly.
Well, I think it's like a misunderstanding. And I think it's really important when we sit in front of a healer, whoever they are, that we understand what's the lens that they're working through.
Yeah.
And what's the scope of their practice? What can they bring to the table and what can't they bring to the table so that our expectations are in line with what they bring to the table?
I think that's a really good point because a lot of our listeners still have to go to the doctor, right, after recovery. And we always tell them it is your responsibility to know what kind of medication is going in your body.
Oh, and yes, and I say, before you get on a medication, what's the exit plan?
Yeah, right.
That's the other thing. I'm like, I asked the doctor, if you're going to put me on a medication, how are you going to get me off it?
Yeah, absolutely. Without destroying my whole family and life, if possible, please and thank you.
Yeah, and have you done it before?
And have you done it before?
So, yeah, those are important questions. So it took me a long time to find a doctor who really understood the nature of chronic pain and how to detox me. And he did. I went into his pain management program. He helped me detox off the benzos and the opiates. And I walked in there with 40 years of chronic pain. And I walked out 52 days later with no pain.
Wow.
Which was astonishing. And he had a 94% success rate in that program.
Wow. So, where is that located?
Well, this was the pain management program at the Betty Ford Center in Rancho Mirage.
The Betty Ford Center, yeah.
And Dr. Peter, who ran that, they have a different, I mean, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that pain program. I'm just saying Peter isn't there anymore because Peter passed away in 2016. But he left us this book, Conquer Chronic Pain, An Innovative Mind-Body Approach.
Oh, wow. I'd like to read that. Yeah.
Which is a great book. And he has exercises in the back. It's totally readable. And then my book, The Way Through Chronic Pain, Tools to Reclaim Your Healing Power, is my story and the kind of how I use the tools from, you know, he's the doctor. So he's coming in from the doctory end. I'm the client, the patient, and I'm coming in from, you know, this was like, I'm in chronic pain. How do you do this? Like, what is that?
Right.
Why am I even using these tools? Like that kind
of thing. Because for pain, it can almost seem like relief is our birthright, almost like food, right? When you're in pain, you can think about is relief.
Well, pain does have this tendency of stealing our attention away from everything but it.
Yeah.
And the meaning that we're making of our pain experience is huge. So, I mean, I do whole podcasts just on that.
on that alone. I know. So let's talk a little bit about during this time, what was the importance of whether it was friends or family or a group that you found that had similar experiences? What was your experience with support groups?
Yeah. So again, I tried to learn everything I could about my situation so that I could talk to the doctors at their level.
Yeah.
So that when I went into the room, I was collaborating. There wasn't this, oh, holier than I, you know, I'm just this peon and this person's just, mm-mm. So the power
structure. That's how it used to be.
The power structure. Well, I fought for that.
I fought for it too, girl. I mean, to say, you know, look, that was the old model. In with the new model.
Yeah. So really important for ourselves to have that. Now, how do you get that? You get that by trying to get into community with other people that are going through what you're going through. And mm-hmm. I found myself in hospitals and rehab, you know, physical rehab places and all kinds for, you know, for years and years, like 30 years, and doctor's offices. And I would talk to people. We would talk to one another and we would ask questions and we would help each other. And so very important that you're talking person to person,
Yes.
with somebody, that you're not in the trenches alone. So that's
yes.
the other people that are having your experience. The other one is my family.
Yeah.
My husband was a rock and he was also a scientist and he was able to kind of, you know, help me with like sorting out the logic of the stuff.
Right.
My son was amazing. Unfortunately, he really suffered a lot of the fallout because the pain was taking attention from my husband and me and him. And so he didn't get as much focus, I feel like, as in his childhood as he should, but he ended up, he's now a trauma coach. That's what he does. So, and he trains other health practitioners to be trauma-informed health practitioners. That's also what he does. So that's kind of cool.
And I think that really is important because almost everyone, whether they come to us in our physical facility, the Lodge at Delray Beach, or we work with them online at Recovery Comes Home, everyone has trauma.
Oh, yeah. And
especially since 2019.
Oh, well, yes, of course. Yeah, well, that's a whole other layer.
It's raised addiction, alcoholism, overdose, and suicide up by 40% across the board.
Oh, no, I didn't know it was that high.
It's very high.
That's that I just felt that kind of hurt. Felt that in my heart. I didn't realize it was so big. I knew it was happening, but I didn't realize it was so big. That's astonishing.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, I live in a town with 20% of its population in recovery. I see these alarming statistics and I really try to be a watchman on the wall, you know, because, you know, we've gotten this reputation as champions for the marginalized around town because we really do fight for those who don't have a voice and who can't, not because of socioeconomic reasons, but because they have been caught down a rabbit hole that they just can't get out of.
Yeah, I hear you.
What do you think we can do to help break the stigma to get more people some help?
Well, I think the people that have the words, like you and me, that actually can speak the words that need to be spoken. Why I come on every podcast I can find that will hear me, because it's such a misunderstanding that there's a stigma around addiction in the first place. It's a response to trauma.
Yes.
It's a way that we're trying to find safety in the world. We're just doing it in an unhealthy way.
Absolutely.
And it's just a huge misunderstanding that it's some kind of like moral failure and et cetera, et cetera. And also it's like the brain gets changed by this chronic pain.
Sure.
We get trauma that's unresolved. Then we get chronic pain. Then we get addiction. That's the order.
Because your executive center function shuts down.
Yes. But also the brain is all changed like that. Yes. And also the emotional center is hit hard. So we get this more of it. We have a little negative bias anyway, but we get more this very pronounced negative bias where I'm wrong, you're wrong, the world's wrong, I'm bad. You know, mm-hmm. It was that mostly it turns in on us. So we have this massive self-esteem issue. Now, how, when you're down in the trenches at that level, how are you going to pull yourself up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can't.
You need help. We have to do this in community.
Yeah.
See, so one way that we solve this problem is to turn and look at the truth of the matter.
Yeah.
What's actually happening? Not what society says is happening, not our values and our beliefs. What's
not our blown up idea in our head that makes molehills into mountains.
Yeah. What's the actual truth of the matter?
Yeah.
And if we can't see the truth of the matter, we need to ask ourselves, well, what do I need to do to see clearly? What's fogging my glasses over, which is why partly why I do the work that I do, is to help people see clearly. That's I do yoga and ancestral clearing, and I do trauma work and all this stuff to help people clear their own stuff so that they can actually see, you know, what's in front of them.
And well, it's interesting for people to not appreciate someone getting sober when alcohol is immersed in our culture.
Well, that would be the other issue. You know, we're beginning to see, yes, the alcohol is there. And then there's this whole drug situation that's gotten completely out of control. But there's also the sugar. I started sugar junkie as a kid, you know, with sugar in my formula.
Or getting away with something. Or you have a small thing that gives a little bit of a dopamine hit.
Yeah.
And in some people, that once they hit that dopamine, they chase that dopamine hit for the rest of their life, unless arrested.
Yeah. It's the way that the nervous system, the reptilian part of us, is set up. That's the way we're set up. That's why, another reason why I do the work that I do, that we can awaken from this unconscious, at least some of it, unconscious programming, make some of that unconscious conscious, and then take some ownership in our behaviors, in our reactions to our behaviors, try and moderate, shift them so that they're more appropriate.
Why don't we talk a little bit about that? I know your life has changed incredibly since you entered recovery, and you made it with the chronic pain and recovery. You made that kind of your life's work.
Oh, yes. I had, when I was in treatment, there's 100 people on the campus at Betty Ford, 100 patients, and there's 400 people supporting all of them.
Sure.
And 80 of them went to relapse school in the afternoon, and the other 20 of us went to pain track. So I wasn't getting any training in relapse. I wasn't getting any education in that. So I asked my counselor, well, okay, what do we do about that? And she says to me, well, there's an 80% relapse rate in the first year. And I'm like,
that's right.
Well, I'm doomed. I didn't like the odds on that one. And the second thing I thought to myself, what's wrong with the model we're using? If that's what we can do, we got to change that up. You know, so I dedicated myself in that moment to doing what I could to move the needle on that relapse rate. And because addiction is essentially a chronic pain issue,
it is.
That's my angle, and unresolved trauma, which is why I do the trauma work along with the chronic pain. That's kind of this package that I bring to the table.
Yeah. Well, it was interesting. Somebody relapsed a few years ago, and I heard somebody say something to him that I never had before. And she said, I'm sorry, you must have been in so much pain to take that choice.
Yeah. So, you know, Gabor Mate has put it like so succinctly, Dr. Gabor Mate.
I love him. Yeah.
Don't ask why the addiction, ask why the pain.
Yeah.
Right. So we have to focus our attention on the thing that's actually the problem. Right. So that's what I have to say about that. Yeah.
And what do you see your plans for the future?
Well, I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. So I'm just finishing up. We're going to launch it at the end of the month. It's 18 videos, 30 minutes each, on foundations of trauma recovery. So that's for anybody in recovery, but anybody that's trying to get a clear trauma, just get some stability in their recovery. That's the focus of that work. And that's where I'm really focused is how people come into recovery, but how can they get their sea legs and really get stable in it? How can they build a firm foundation? That's where I'm focused there.
Yeah, good. I think that your work is so needed in the world. I hear of so many people with chronic pain. I have been in the medical system. I know that a lot of people, you know, the medical community conveniently threw a whole bunch of people under the bus.
Well, the Western medical models, I hear you.
Yeah.
I think it'd be kind of be interesting maybe to flesh that out and just be specific, but let me just do it this way. The Western medical model is great at trauma, like
physical trauma, getting you,
great at that, but
saving your life.
This chronic stuff,
it's for the birds.
It's not really the focus of medical school. Maybe it's changed and we're getting more integrative doctors and stuff. And also they're looking at this reductionist model where they're looking at the broken bone or the torn whatever or the bashed in whatever.
They're not looking at the person.
You're not looking at the whole mind, body, and spirit, which is what happens to one happens to all. And so again, what are you looking for when you go to a doctor? What do you see that their function is and what are their limitations? What can they bring to the table and what are they not able to bring to you because of the scope of their practice?
Yeah. And I think that's a good point because, you know, you wouldn't walk to KFC and expect a salad, you know, you're expecting fried chicken. So if you walk into a doctor's office, they can do things like write you a prescription, schedule a surgery, or do chemo. And I think those are their only three options, right?
Or they can run tests.
Run diagnostic testing. But it would be best for us to keep aware and cognizant that they only have certain tools in their tool belt. So to expect them not to use a prescription pad, a surgery knife.
Well, the insurance company also, you know, requires them to stay within their scope of practice. They have to toe the line, so they've got liability issues too. So it's important, you know, you're not going to go into a Western doctor, into my GP, and I'm not going to ask for an acupuncture treatment. And I'm not going to ask for a massage or a chiropractic treatment, or I'm not going to ask for, I'm going to be very careful about what it is that I'm asking of that doctor. And I love my family doctor. He's amazing at what he does. He's very helpful. And outside of that, I go to other people.
Yeah, right. And that's an important point to take note of. They have their limited scope. And then when their scope is exhausted, you need to find other means. So let me ask you, if you could go back and you could sit across from you in chronic pain, before you knew all of this that you know now, what direction would you guide yourself in or what advice would you give to your younger self to avoid all of this?
I think that's not quite the question I'd be asking.
What? Go ahead.
I think the question I'd be asking is, because in my case, I really couldn't avoid. I kind of had to take, and avoidance was my big problem. This is one of the things we have in chronic pain is we're trying to get rid of the chronic pain.
Yes.
Everything we can to get, you know, to move away from our experience. When if one of the keys of really learning to get the message that pain is information, it's not good or bad, it's information, is to just accept that you have it instead of fighting with it, which was one of the reasons why mine was so epic, because I'm an epic fighter.
Yeah, me too.
So it would be like, breathe, accept, you're going to be okay. Keep working to find the solution because there's a solution out there. And there's also the solution in here. The greatest healer in my life is not out there, doctor or some healer. It's right in here.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't understand that until much later in my healing.
Me too. Yeah.
Kept looking out there, grasping, and not understanding that all those healers are guides giving us instructions for these are the optimal ways to optimize your healing journey, but the healing thing is happening in here.
Yeah. I couldn't agree with you more. I looked to everyone else until I looked to me. And I had said for a lot of years that I had seen myself healed. Because 4 years ago, I was 74 pounds in a wheelchair. And I had said, I can see myself healed. It's just not yet. Well, now I'm healed. I'm not cured. They can't fix me, you know, but they don't know what to do with what they can't fix.
Well, and now you're putting it off to the they when it's here. So
I healed me. Yeah.
But you're the one that internal healer knows exactly what to do.
Yeah.
That's the thing. This is the power of this conversation, is understanding the shift in that perspective is like everything.
Yeah. I usually like to say I walked away from the allopathic medical community. I still have a primary doctor. I still have physicians, but I don't look to them for my healing anymore.
Yeah.
I look at them, I'm getting older, you know, so you need tests sometimes and scans sometimes, but I'm just a different girl. I'm not approaching them as the sick Adrian anymore.
Yeah, I hear you. I go and see my doctor in a well check every year, and he just gives me a status report from his angle, right? And if there's something that's happening with me that maybe he needs to take a look at, then it's there. But, you know, or he'll send me off to, oh, you have this thing, go see so-and-so, maybe a cardiologist or whoever, to some specialist to you know, orthopedic, whatever the thing is. So they're kind of an assessor and a send you off to so-and-so. They shunt me off to wherever, a director in my life.
Right.
Very valuable, though. Very valuable, because they know exactly who the people are that I need to go see if I need to see somebody in that system. Wonderful for that.
Well, you know, we're running a little short on time here, Elizabeth, but I just want to say you look so vibrant and beautiful. I'm so glad that you had the strength and determination to just keep chasing your dreams.
Oh, thank you. And I had so much help. I had, like, you know, armies of people that supported me along the way.
Don't we all, right? It takes a village.
It sure does. I think it took a whole country in my case.
Well, I look forward to interviewing you again. And until then, thank you, everyone, for watching the Recovery Comes Home radio podcast. I'm your host, Adrian Tickey. Tune in next time for more stories of triumph, resilience, and healing. See everybody again.
Thank you for tuning in to Recovery Comes Home radio. We hope that today's episode has provided you with valuable information and insights on the recovery process. Remember, you are not alone on this journey. Keep seeking support, practicing self-care, and moving forward one step at a time. Until next time, stay strong, stay resilient, and stay humble. Hope lives here.